When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
The T-Biz podcast delivers T-news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that heals and energizes the body while soothes the mind. Transforming the leaf requires a fusion of artistry, craftsmanship, and commerce. The tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts a global influence, generating $260 billion in sales and employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. U.S. reciprocal tariff rates expanded, not expired, on July 9th. Tech Brew 2025 champions are named in India, and the Chinese discover yet another species of tea. Plus, the Regenerative Tea Action Project collaborates with smallholder tea farmers and cooperatives to promote the adoption and commercial benefits of regenerative organic farming. The project has advanced from strategic planning to field-level implementation, targeting in-depth agronomic and ecological innovation through four deep dives that address soil health and ecosystem resilience, biodiversity, nutrient density, regenerative certification, and carbon use in tea. Founder Annabelle Calmer joins T-Biz to describe the project's pioneering efforts to transform the global tea sector into a regenerative powerhouse, integrating agronomic innovation, ecological integrity, and financial sustainability. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
U.S. tariffs that many in the tea lands expected to expire on July 9th were expanded, effective August 1st. Vietnam announced that it had concluded negotiations for a bilateral trade agreement imposing 20% tariffs before the deadline, only to suffer a punishing 40% duty on goods transshipped from its ports. Vietnam was one of only three countries on a list of 90 that has been granted relief. Professor Maurice Obstfeld, a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, told The Guardian in London that, quote, "I think that this shows is that the bluster in April about we're going to negotiate all these trade deals was way overhyped." Japan, the seventh largest tea exporter by value globally, and South Korea each experienced a shock of a 10% baseline tariff climbing to 30%. Brazil faces a 50% tariff that threatens coffee exports to the U.S. Reciprocal tariffs, which are now expanding beyond China, target a wide range of countries, including key tea exporters such as Sri Lanka, India, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Laos. Rates range from 20 to 50%. Canada faces a 35% tariff on all non-exempt goods under the USMCA treaty. President Trump called out 14 trade partners by name, suggesting there are still 2 weeks for each to reach favorable agreements. Tariffs are generating $60 billion a month from imports, up 13% compared to 2024, a cost that is mainly passed to customers. Stock prices dropped sharply, but inflation and unemployment remain in check. Prices rebounded with the S&P Stock Exchange posting a record high. High tariffs are here to stay, say economic analysts. Businesses should expect uncertainty and logistical complexity to remain. The August 1st tariffs, if enacted, would bring the effective tariff rate to somewhere between 15 and 20% for the U.S., a significant boost over the 2024 average of 2.5%. Four students representing ICAR, the Indian Agricultural Research Institute in New Delhi, were awarded first prize in the TechBrew 2025 competition, sponsored by India's Tea Research Association. Judges commended Echo Tea partners Aaron Sakhar, Karen Moy Patra, K. Sukranth Reddy, and Alex Sinha for their AI-powered decision support system that offers precise, climate-resilient, and cost-effective cultivation guidance, cutting input costs by up to 40% while enhancing yield and sustainability. Two teams also representing ICAR, New Delhi, also tied for second place, Team Karamoy Patra and Team Alex Sinha. Team Karamoy demonstrated a tech-integrated pest management ecosystem leveraging AI, drones, and digital traceability for smarter, sustainable residue compliance. Team Alex Sinha demonstrated an innovative soil health monitoring array of devices that combine real-time sensors, biochar, and AI for carbon-smart tea farming and access to carbon credits. TRA Principal Officer and Secretary Joydeep Phukan at Tuklai organized the second annual event on the occasion of International Tea Day, May 21st. Quote, "We're thrilled to announce the winners of this unique initiative by the Tea Research Association, Tuklai, to foster next-generation solutions for sustainable and innovative tea cultivation," he said. Karush Barusha writes that, quote, "Judging this diverse and high-caliber collection of submission ideas was truly challenging. I was super impressed at the quality and effort that went into the winning entries," end quote, he writes. "Each team addressed a pressing tea industry challenge with an innovative eye to the future. The proposals look to holistically demonstrate real potential impact, commercial feasibility, and business value. It is only through such exploration of new thinking and new approaches that our industry can aspire to inspire and strive to thrive and not just survive," writes Barushka, former Global Tea Expertise Director at Unilever, Lipton Teas and Infusions. Third place honors, also a tie with a cash prize, went to Team AgroCentury from PSG iTech at Tamil Nadu, and Team Smart Soil, representing Karpagam Academy of Higher Education, also in Tamil Nadu. Smart Soil developed a portable 7-in-1 sensor with GPS capabilities, enabling offline and real-time soil health monitoring for smarter input and improved tea quality. Team AgroCentury has created a secure cloud-based platform that provides explainable real-time predictions for yield, pests, and soil health, leveraging AI and big data. Judges included Aaron Singh at Goodrick, Abhijit Hazarika, Venkatesan Isavaraj, and Dan Bolton. Tea Association of Italy founder Marco Bortona reports that during a field investigation in Malipo County, Wenshan Prefecture, in Yunnan Province, Chinese researchers discovered a previously undocumented species belonging to the tea group Thea. Following comprehensive studies involving morphology, molecular systematics, and phenology, The plant has now been officially confirmed as a new species within the tea section. It is distinguished from other members of the group by its dense, hairy branches and buds, large flowers, three sepals, and a slightly later flowering period. This marks the first newly discovered wild species in the Camellia sacthea since the 1980s, a significant milestone in tea taxonomy. With its red-tinted buds and abundant trichomes, it represents a unique and valuable wild genetic resource for future breeding and conservation. To date, only a single small population of fewer than 10 shrubs has been identified in the tropical montane deciduous forests. Researchers are currently working on clonal propagation and chemical profiling to safeguard its preservation and explore its potential for tea production. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and I founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
To promote the adoption and commercial benefits of regenerative organic farming. The project has advanced from strategic planning to field-level implementation, targeting in-depth agronomic and ecological innovation through four deep dives that address soil health and ecosystem resilience, biodiversity, nutrient density, regenerative certification, and carbon use in tea. Founder Annabelle Calmer joins TBiz to describe the project's pioneering efforts to transform the global tea sector into a regenerative powerhouse, integrating agronomic innovation, ecological integrity, and financial sustainability. Annabelle Calmer established Tea Rebellion to transform the tea industry through direct trade, transparency, and single origin sourcing. Since its launch in 2018, the B Corp certified brand has won more than 20 international tasting awards. A graduate of the University of California at Davis and the London Business School, Calmer holds degrees in agricultural economics and business management and has conducted field work in Latin America. She divides her time between Toronto, Canada, and London, UK. Thanks so much for joining us. Will you begin with an overview of the project?
Okay, sure. Happy to do that. So the Regenerative Tea Action Project has its genesis in conversation with farmers about regenerative and really the soils, climate challenges, and where we currently are at with nature and biodiversity on many tea farms, and the recognition that the supply chain can't be pushing for yet another certification.
What's the alternative?
It needs to be farmer practice led, and also there needs to be rewards and commercial benefits to adopting these new things on farms. So that came out from conversations talking with farmers in my travels, basically. In parallel with COP last year in November, we got a bunch of people from the tea industry together and had this idea of why don't we launch an action project with the entire value chain. So there are farmers, there are retailers, there are also tea institutions like European Specialty Tea Association. There are also some buyers now talking and joining these talks, even though officially they haven't really signed up to it yet. So basically, the idea is represent the whole value chain and together de-risk that change process for farmers and also bring everyone up to understanding of what are the challenges around climate, soil carbon, additionality, biodiversity on farms. These last 6 months, we've done first a little bit of what's the project and what are we trying to achieve and why are we doing this with lots of people in different quite collaborative calls. And then we quite quickly moved into a phase which I would call common baseline setting or upskilling or bringing everyone on the same page with regard to four topics. So the last one we just did was on financing and the business case for regenerative. Then we also did one on certification, where we had the Regenerative Organic Alliance, they are speaking, and we also looked at some other regenerative standards. And then we had one on biodiversity, and then another session which was looking at soil organic carbon. So those four topics were chosen by the group of people in these initial kind of target setting workshops as one, some that we want to spend more time thinking about. So in each of those 2 hour sessions, we went into deep into the topics, the challenges. We had some external speakers, and those sessions are now available soon as webinars on, you know, publicly. Right now we haven't uploaded them yet, but they will be. And so we've come to the end of that first 6 months, and the plan is to do, to now go into, after a short period of various policy and fundraising between now and December, to go into actual piloting. And we've set out a project pitch, as it were, where we're reaching out to various people who could fund this, because that next phase, if it is about changing practices on the ground, helping people to take data, helping people to access finance, helping people to certify, it certainly requires some funds to support. So that's where we are. We want to really focus on fundraising and building a toolkit. And then the next phase will be focused on piloting and action on the farm.
Let's talk about fundraising for a moment.
Perfect. Okay. So investing in the soil at farm level, my understanding is what needs to happen is people first need to understand what the baseline is. What is the current, and there are various metrics you can take, but really how good is your soil at the beginning? How much carbon does it have? How active is it like nutrients? How much water does it retain? And how fertile is that soil? You need that baseline because that opens up a lot of other things. And part of the challenge we have is that people already go ahead and implement good things on their farms, but they don't know where they started with. And that creates in the world of voluntary carbon markets a potential problem after on, where the good adopters, the early adopter, are penalized in terms of their potential returns on that investment. But those are the kind of things you want to measure on the farm. And then there are things, practices you want to implement on the farms around increasing that soil organic matter, around increasing the ability to retain moisture, around increasing the microbial activity in the soils, and nutrients, et cetera. And ideally, using organic materials for that rather than inorganic fertilizer for various reasons. When we talked about financing and funding for the project, there are actually three areas that we would like to support with in that next phase. And that first one is around helping basically collect regenerative tea data. There is very little out there because it's such a new topic, and that spans obviously carbon and biodiversity and nature, but a lot of the carbon part is focused on soils. Help to develop a toolkit. Develop that toolkit that people can just have to download if you're a farmer somewhere and you're interested in finding out, well, which, there's so many certifications out there, which one's worth it for me? And what do I practically need to do in year one in order to have done the right actions? You know, that kind of advice for someone out there who isn't a big company who can just access that. And then thirdly, supporting farms with doing that kind of baselining, piloting, and certification. So those are the three asks that we're reaching out to potential funders. Basically, you're reaching out to two types of organizations. One is a bit more green tech or green AI. There are a couple of AI funds out there for regenerative that we approached. And then the other one is more, let's say, conventional donor aid funding for development projects. Be a third area, which is just people who are really interested in seeing innovation in the space of carbon and nature in the agriculture sector, which could be any angel or anyone who is interested in seeing the right things happening and taking a lead on topics that they care about.
Tea lands in some parts of the world are more depleted than others, such as Sri Lanka, where ongoing production has continued for 150 years. We see similar issues in Africa and, of course, in India. Could you please speak a little about where regenerative practices can have the most significant impact? Which regions most benefit from your initiative?
That is a bit of a philosophical question, I think. When your soils are very, very depleted, obviously you have the biggest bang for the buck from a soil perspective. If you then go, you know, stop conventional production, go to organic, really look after your soil and change a lot of practices on your farm, it will also take quite a while to restore the whole ecosystem. Because if you've been farming conventionally for, as you said, 100 years, you're with all the spraying, et cetera, there is very little inherent biodiversity left in that land. As we see many of the big feed farms, it's very much monoculture and there's very little strips of nature left. So I think it would take a while before there is some kind of ecosystem balance restored on those farms. So if we then go to the other extreme, you know, farm someone who's already farming, maybe biodynamically or organically their tea, and now they want to have a strong focus on soil fertility and ecosystem resilience, they just need to add a couple additional things or implement a couple of changes in their practices, like really avoiding a loss of soil, having no cover on the soils and integrating, you know, biodiversity corridors and things like that. It's just some specific things. And then their system could really, really stabilize and become strong from a biodiversity perspective. So I think from a soil perspective, the former, the conventional ones will probably see the biggest leap quickly. Earning income from soil carbon is greater for conventional because it's so depleted initially. But earning income from the whole regenerative system and biodiversity might be greater for a farm that already has some biodiversity on it.
That's helpful. I appreciate your response. The government of Kenya recently ordered the nation's tea factories to halt Rainforest Alliance audits. Generally, are third-party certifiers adopting regenerative standards?
So I think the regenerative parties out there that we are talking to are friends. They're trying to help. They're trying to do something that is very much aligned with what we're doing. But there's still, you know, third parties that have certain levies to pay or, you know, auditing fees if you do them. Some of them are just have a framework language. But I think there's something inherently totally wrong from a farmer's perspective with how the whole compliance and certification space works then. So I'm really quite glad that you brought this up with Rainforest Alliance. And the reason that is I think it's very, I come from a consulting background, right? And you used to do these projects or analysis based on 80-20. So you try to get 80% of it right and not bother about the last final piece of analysis. And the whole approach about audits, of course, is to be error-free. So you audit every single parcel or every single piece of land, and because you don't, as a certifier, want to be left with a risk factor that there is potentially something wrong in that last piece of land. And that's the total risk avoidance. But having no risk in the audit system is highly, highly inefficient and very costly. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, that hit the nail on the head, Annabelle. The pursuit of zero risk in certification audits leads to inefficiency and high costs. Certifiers spend only a few days inspecting farms, yet farmers invest heavily to comply. Then comes a $3,000 to $4,000 bill ultimately passed on to consumers. Meanwhile, consumer trust is declining. Willingness to pay a sustainability premium has dropped from 40% to just 27%.
What I think needs to happen to go from a system that is highly inefficient because it's uncomfortable with any kind of risks to a system that does spot checks and therefore is, you know, like we do for food. So basically there is, you take a sample of farms that you go to every year. Like, so for example, in Nepal, most of the farms are already organically farming, but they're having such a hard time getting the certifiers out there because of the remoteness, et cetera. And in cooperatives, that's even worse because of the small plots, et cetera. So if each cooperative, you know, wouldn't quite know when the certifier comes, but they know every couple of years they're going to show up, and then it's kind of, you know, they can take a decision what percentage of their certification, their outstanding farms, etc. in Nepal, they want to sample at any point in, you know, any year. If Nepal is a country that never cheats, then they probably do very little. If it's a country that always cheats, they'd make it higher. So I want to move away from this. Every single entity needs to be certified every year because that's so inefficient for all of us.
Do you have examples of regenerative certified tea farms that generate a return on investment? Not necessarily in actual profits, but at least holistically.
For mice farmers, it's too early to say that. But from the other ones that are regenerative organic certified, for example, White Orchard, we should ask them with their numbers. Whether I think for their brand, it's been a huge thing. At a farm level, now it's, it all depends on how you do your economics, right? Whether that at the farm level shows a business case and a return on investment or not. But I think what I'm trying to say is that it's a holistic equation, not just the tea alone, because I think that is, unless you have very, very premium tea, and this is where it brings us to, if you're able to sell that tea into very premium markets, then that's a different equation. But a lot of the farms we're talking to, that isn't necessarily the market that they're selling into. The challenge with the standard, in my view, is that it's so gray zone. You're still allowed to use agrochemicals, but only a certain time. This is why it's difficult from a consumer perspective, I think, but also from a environmental perspective, because there is no yes or no. We don't do this anymore because it's 2025. We don't spray at all anymore because we have other objectives. And I think that's a challenge with the Rainforest Alliance standard, particularly for me, that it's not a clear standard with regard to these practices, and then therefore a questionable one with regard to regenerative altogether.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.